Welcome to The Mend, a podcast to learn about services and support for victims and survivors of crime, sponsored through the Center for Crime Victim Services here in the state of Vermont. I'm Anna Nassett, your host for this bi-monthly show. So today on the show, we have the wonderful Carol Olson, who has had a varied career in art therapy, trauma program development, and radio. She has worked extensively in leadership roles in the anti-violence field since 2006. And she'll be sharing more with about her work in a little bit. Carol formerly served in leadership roles in multiple agencies focused on sexual and domestic violence. Carol participates in social justice cause work as well, including the Racial Justice Task Force on the Action Alliance, dedicated to developing non-racist agencies within the cause areas. She also founded the Virginia Art Therapy Association and helped Virginia achieve licensure for art therapy in 2020. She is a licensed professional counselor, a board certified art therapist, and a certified substance abuse counselor. She has worked on various projects for community service boards and private practice, including the board of directors for Evawi and Violence Against Women International in 2020. She also developed an interest in community-led independent radio and served as president of the Virginia, too many V's in there, Center for Public Press, from 2015 to 2020. Carol now hosts several radio shows, including The V Word, an anti-violence show, Women in Politics, Richmond Recovers, and specials on local news events. Thank you so much for being here today, Carol.
Thanks for having me. Wow. So that's why I'm so tired.
You've done so much. Carol and I first met in San Francisco, as we are both board members for Evawi, and quickly connected over our love of boots and our bangs and our black glasses, and had a really wonderful day going to a Frida Kahlo show, which was really incredible. And it's always nice to bond over art in this space. Something that, as many people know, is my background. And often in this field of, you know, just being kind of entrenched in the work, we lose a little bit of that art. So I would love to like bring some art into this conversation today, as well as the other things you do. But I always like to start by asking guests to just kind of share what they're comfortable sharing of how they were called into this field of work and how that's morphed for them over the years.
Sure. So really, you know, as I started out as an art therapist and started out as creating the local statewide agency as a professional membership, really designed to train other art therapists and give us a holding place, and also to seek licensure, which took a really long time, but and title protection for our work, and separate us out from artists doing creative things, and which is also valuable. Obviously, I'm an artist too. And so through that work, art therapy really works well with trauma. So I always ended up seeing a lot of trauma patients. And then from there, you know, it's the winding journey. I worked in mental health first in hospitals in California and Virginia, and worked with kids, cancer kids, and then injury and violence. And then eventually worked with sexual and domestic violence and ended up running a rape crisis center in Virginia for several years. And so that's where I kind of moved from practice to administration and program development, and expanding, you know, how rape crisis centers intersected with trauma counselors, which was a huge thing in Virginia at the time. And then I moved to a domestic violence center, and I worked in a local statewide agency called the Virginia Sexual Domestic Violence Action Alliance, where I got involved in racial justice and really structuring helping our local centers, because then I was a development director and really helped other local centers get funding and expand their services, but also create a really anti-racist orientation to the work. And then I worked at a national organization for a while, again, doing development, Black Women's Blueprint as a interim development person for them. And then now actually I work in I'm back in hospital-based services, and I really, really like it. And so now I have kind of evolved from managing violence intervention teams that went to the ED, and now I'm the strategic development administrator over the VCU, which is Virginia Commonwealth University, Injury and Violence Prevention Program, which is housed within the School of Medicine and in collaboration with the VCU Health System's trauma, because VCU Health is a level one trauma center. And then I collaborate and do development also with the Center for Trauma and Critical Care Education, which trains EMS and pre-hospital providers, and also with the Pan American Trauma Society as we're trying to implement this type of work in hospitals across South America.
Amazing. A full career. And we're
Yeah.
still so young. I love it.
Not that young, but yeah.
But we are. I'm like fascinated by everything that you've done and that growth journey that you've had. But I'm really interested in the work that you're doing now. And I'm not sure if this will tie in together, but my previous episode I had on Dr. Alex from here in Vermont, who was a victim of crime and through the medical system. And so I'm wondering how you're kind of, it sounds like the work you're doing is very outward and inward facing, outward of how do responders identify violence that someone might be experiencing, but then also inward of how is staff, doctors, nurses experience potential violence. Is that correct?
Yes. And the reason I liked coming back to working in hospitals is I'm a survivor of violence. And like many survivors, I have more than one story. And while sometimes the legal system has not supported me very well, I really found in when I was the victim of a serial rapist in Richmond, Virginia, that operated several years ago, that my negative experience was with the hospital. Not the one I currently work in, but and it was right before DNA was hitting, and I was very young and in college, and the doctors really had no training on trauma-informed services or how to deal with survivors. So my hospital experience was terrible, and the doctor was screaming at me, and I'd left without getting DNA, and eventually that person was caught. And the police, because we're actually very empathetic and trauma-informed, because we had somebody in our community, then a police officer who was training Richmond police on that kind of response. So in that realm, I realized that a lot of our, and then, years later, I really went into the advocacy world and realized that the advocacy world was really focusing on training law enforcement. And we had major gains in Virginia happen through a lot of the work that my center did and the Action Alliance did, which was getting blind reporting, increasing training for police, bringing our evidence into one facility. So we didn't have backlogs happening in local police stations like other states are having. So we made amazing steps forward. We kind of left the healthcare system behind. And so when I saw this opportunity to go work in a level one trauma center, I realized I could bring some expertise toward this program and the rise of hospital-based violence intervention programs, and they're called HVIPs. That really started with community violence and in certain cities, and Richmond was high in the realm of community violence, which is, for people who are unaware, it's youth gunshots and youth crime, and youth being from like 10 years old to mid-20s. And there are some states and cities that have really spiked, and Richmond was one of them. We just seem to have a high crime rate for whatever reason. We're on 95, who knows all the reasons. And so, but there's then, I came along and joined this program, and they were starting the nugget of a domestic violence program based off what they call the Davis Challenge, where a doctor came to VCU, Dr. Davis, and said, "You guys need to get it together for DV." And then our chief medical officer listened to that and started Project Empower with our forensic team. And so then I come along and I'm looking at the intersection of DV and community violence and realizing that we really need to push training healthcare providers to screen. Our initial paper on that just showed that healthcare providers don't know how to screen, weren't using evidence-based tools, and if they did manage to screen, they didn't know what to do with the person. And so that, and now my program is a TTA provider for other hospitals for both community violence, and now we're starting with domestic violence. So it's the rise of helping the healthcare system internally identify and step in, intervene earlier to prevent injury or re-injury. Statistics, tell us what 40% of people who are killed in a domestic violence attack have been to a healthcare provider in the year before. You're more likely as a survivor of violence or someone experiencing ongoing violence to intersect with the healthcare profession more often than any other profession. And so we really need to help our healthcare system upgrade their ability to identify, respond, and have hospital-based professionals who can intersect and intervene.
Incredible, incredible work. And thank you for sharing a little bit about your story. I'm sorry that that happened to you. And I think, most of us are in this work from some sort of lived experience. And it gets to that point where you're like, oh, well, you're not going to change it, so I guess I will. And I definitely hear that in just your trajectory. And it's incredible that now this program is being used as a model for others across the country. That's something to be really proud of.
Yeah. I mean, I work with amazing people. I really do. I'm proud of every single one of them.
Are you also looking at, so you're looking at how the hospital and medical system can, be trauma-informed when working with people who are experiencing violence. Are you also looking at how healthcare workers are experiencing violence?
Yes. That is one of the requests we get from administration every time we talk with them is, do you see staff as well? And so really our program sees employees, patients, and students because we're linked with the university. And yes, we are looking at how can we help employees because once again, one in four of our employees are female or women employees are likely to be survivors of violence. We've had tragedies happen. We've had, 2 years ago, one of our staff in one of our inpatient units was killed by her abuser. We've had other staff harassed at our hospital. We have had shootings at the hospital. I mean, just like anything, we are upgrading our security as well because of that. But that workplace violence and is one aspect, but also because that abusers will often abuse their victims at their jobs as they try to get them to leave their jobs or to be fired or just to interfere in their autonomy and independence. So that's an aspect as well as we work with our, we are one of the hospitals that has our own police force inside the hospital and the university. And we work closely with them to train them as well as healthcare providers and making sure people have time to do it. We're embedding an evidence-based screening tool called HITS within our electronic medical so that system so that any provider can pull it down and do the screening tool and then link to the Project Empower, which is the DV program within the hospital.
Incredible. This is, I'm very excited about this. I'm going to be telling some of my friends here in Vermont about this if they don't already know. How are you all looking at the prevention side of things? Because we have the tools to respond. How are you all starting to tackle that side of prevention of like, how do we uproot the violence, not even just in the community, but also in the medical system?
So we have a prevention program, several prevention programs for any of our injury and violence, because our injury and violence is intentional and unintentional injuries. DV and community violence is just one of the things we do. But we have prevention programs called Emerging Leaders to help youth change the trajectory of their life, especially if they're victims of violence. And then we work with them to find them, paths, like say into healthcare or other careers. And then we have a program called Empower Me and You, which is youth dating violence. And we intersect on the domestic violence and intimate partner violence side, we intersect with our local centers. Like we have a YWCA, we have six centers surrounding us that we intersect with and to do prevention out in the schools. So we really bring our prevention as a program, not only internally with our other prevention programs that hit schools. So we have like Impact and Gracie that talk about the impact of trauma and consequences of your choices. So we work with teens on really large scale presentations on the consequences of any behavior, drinking, driving, abuse. And then we also can feed into like a ongoing prevention program that is a course that they take. And we join with our local YWCA on programs like that as well.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. Yeah, like I said, I'm going to be sending this to a lot of different people after this comes out. Because I think it's a really great just base model that you've crafted to your community, to your state, that can be taken to so many others. So it's really exciting. How have you been able to continue to spread the work that you do into your other messaging? I know you do a lot with radio, and so I'd love to hear a little about just like your radio, how you moved into that place, and then how you feel that radio, podcasts, all the things that we're doing can impact politics and support survivors.
Sure. So really, I was a guest on a radio show a long time ago, and like 2012, I think. And I didn't like how it was edited. I knew some people who were part of a local independent radio station in Richmond, and they were like, well, you just come here and do your own show. And that hadn't occurred to me till then. So that's what I did. I showed up at WRAR, which is the Richmond Independent Radio, which is the radio part of Virginia Center for Public Press, and said, I would like to do a show. And they said, sure. There's this
Right.
studio. And I found somebody to train me. And I started out with the V word. And I did a short module on, just providing accurate information on laws, access to resources. So I had all the local centers come on that show and talk about how to intersect with them. I talked about new laws being input, like when we got blind reporting and stalking laws, which are very important, and helping people understand that like stalking is a crime, right? And sexual assault is not your fault. And then where to go. So I had the local hospitals that did have forensics teams come on. So I started with that, and then I just got more involved. Then I did Richmond Recovers, and I did a whole series on substance abuse and mental health. And actually, somebody else took over that show. And then I started training people and started giving some shows away, but I kept the B word. And then I did. I became president, and I ran the station because it's all volunteer. So I did run the station with 150 amazing people, and we do rotating leadership. So I did my rotation in leadership, and now I am a content producer and help train people. And we have a new amazing president. And so being part of that world really helped me understand like consensus building and advocacy in a whole different level, and how to use media for that, and how to engage your community in providing them platforms for voices. So I really created a lot of shows, and not all of them were related to violence, but I also helped train people on reporting in the field, and then training, hosting trainings. So like we did a Women in Audio. So it's a biannual training, which I got money from PEN America to do. So we host all day train-a-thons. That's what we call them. And so in our studio, we invite the public in, and you could spend an hour on air with the DJ and learning how to use the board for on-air, broadcasting. We took people out in the field and showed them with go kits, we call them, and how to record in the field and do, stop the passerby and say, what do you think about the new law being put into place? Or how about this candidate? Who are you voting for? Whatever. And then so we they th the people could rotate through the whole thing all day long and have this really long all day intensive basic stuff on how to produce your own show. My goal was to increase the number of women in radio, because at the time there were 12% women in media, and I got WRAR to 50% women in my tenure there, from content producers to board leadership. And
Incredible.
so it was amazing. And I got racial parity with our community increased as well. And so my whole goal then was actually increasing diversity and ensuring that our community, our radio station represented our community, and bring folks who were marginal and underrepresented into the community radio station as a platform that was for them. And I did started feminist edit-a-thons, and we also did Local Voices Live. So I created a show where we created radio in the community. So we would launch new shows in the community in front of a live audience, and the live audience could be part of the show by asking questions. And that was a lot of fun doing that, where you brought radio out. And we collaborate with local like galleries who would let us host the radio station in their gallery.
Incredible. Like, there's a couple of things. Like, first off, once again, you're like, I didn't like how they edited it, so I decided to change it. I see a theme here, Carol. Just gonna go ahead and say. I mean, I do the same thing. I'm like, well, this didn't work, so how do we change it?
Exactly.
And
Exactly.
you kind of look back at your life and I'm like, how bold was I? Like, when I think back on those things, but I'm now like embracing that more and more here in my state of like, well, I don't like this law. So I don't know, let's just change it. I don't see the problem here.
Yep.
But so I appreciate that you and I both kind of have that sense. And I think so many people do without realizing it. Like, we don't necessarily think of it as brave or bold. It just seems so logical. And looking back, you're like, that was really brave and bold.
Yeah, because I think thanks for saying it that way. I always thought of it as, I don't know. Pushy. But somebody has to do it. Like, we can't. I think people would give me excuses that were just blatantly false. Like, women can't do that. Of course we can. You can't recruit people of color into community orgs because they never have the time to come to daytime training stuff. Well, let's put them at times they can come. Let's go out and mentor them. Let's go. I just really walked around my community and said, you have a great voice and you're saying fabulous things. Please come on the radio and say it. And invited them in and then mentored them through the process, and then trained other people to do the same thing. It's amazing how fast you can create change if you really connect with your community and listen to them.
That was, yeah, the other thing I was gonna say was just that, by all this work you've done in radio, you've been able to see not only your community needs, but also bring people in and empower them and teach them skills. And when we look at uprooting violence in communities, we have to be in the community. And so using radio as that platform is really incredible. That's just such a great model how you've been able to really tie in all the different facets of your life to work together to create systemic change. It's
Yes.
awesome. And I also want to say, like you said, people said I can't do it, or sometimes we think you're like, okay, there's a problem here, but I don't have the skills. Somebody else will do it. And it's like, well, maybe I'll learn the skills because maybe nobody else is going to do it. Like, someone's got to do it. It might as well be me, apparently.
But really, what you find when you open that door is that everyone wants to do it. They just didn't know how. And all I did was just pull out people, grab somebody, open the door, and, invite them in, train them, and then I got out of their way. And then they are amazing at what they do. There's amazing people out here doing amazing stuff every day, and we just need to find them and listen to them because they're there. They're standing probably right next to you.
Absolutely. And other people did the same thing for us by opening the
Yes.
doors and creating those changes. And that's the thing is like when we bring those people in and open the door and put them in that position of leadership, they're going to do the same for others. And that's what I think creates so much change in a really positive way.
Yes. Yep. So don't be afraid. There's somebody.
Absolutely.
Yep. If you feel like you can't do it, there's somebody in your community who can help you. They're there.
Absolutely. And I mean, yeah, both of us being on a show today, and I've been on Carol's podcast as well recently, or one that she produces. And it's just, it's those things you're like, oh, I can do this. So, yes. I kind of want to wind down today by rolling back into arts,
Okay.
of just kind of how you, I mean, I know that's not your role anymore, being an art therapist, but how you maybe continue to use the art for yourself, or even heard like with the radio shows, like tying into galleries, like how you think that art can also create change and healing for people.
Oh yeah, art activism and art for healing. So art as a, like, for trauma, art is a visual spatial task, and visual spatial tasks heal your brain from trauma. And so that as a healing tool alone, art therapy in itself, the reason I got so attached as a young person in college, being assaulted. And that would be my other story of being a college student and going to art school at first. I was going to be a painter like my mom and got assaulted, was held captive for a while. And then somebody introduced me to art therapy as a healing tool, and that's how I got involved in art therapy. And I don't think I could have made it without that kind of support. And so coming back to Virginia, I really got involved in art therapy then, and pushing that as a profession in the local or the statewide committee or statewide agency had collapsed, so I just got it going again. Once again, went out and grabbed a bunch of people and art therapists and said, we can do this, and really needed to upgrade art therapy's role. So in Virginia in particular, we didn't have title protection, and which means you couldn't work and bill. So you weren't licensed eligible. So we worked a lot with the schools and the community to gain those type of roles. But so art therapy is my segue in really changing from an artist to working in the mental health field and just bringing my art experience with me, because it really wasn't, I was going to be an artist. And now I do art really for me and for fun. But along the way in art therapy, it's really conducive to art activism and utilized, especially in the Rape Crisis Center, utilizing helping survivors not only heal, but then turning their words into art activism. And we have some different programs here we can intersect with in the Richmond area, where they teach youth art activism as well. And so I really see art therapy in the arts field as being just a voice, whether it's radio as an artistic spot, whether it's painting, poster making, anything, tagging, that allows people to take their traumatic experiences, heal from them, and then utilize their voice to make change, which is what a lot of survivors want to move on their path toward.
Absolutely. Yeah, you couldn't have said it any better. And I mean, being somebody who also is comes from that background in art and had the big pivot, like I still see it as being something that still is in my life every day and that I can use in different ways to create change and share with others as well. And I think once again, when we look at that kind of violence prevention lens of like putting art into people's hands as a tool for violence prevention, even after that healing place is so powerful.
Yes.
Yes.
So, and thank you for giving a platform, because we don't have people like you out there who also has a story and turned that into a force for activism. So thank you.
Well, absolutely. We stand shoulder to shoulder.
That's
We
right.
really do. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on here today, Carol. This has been such a wonderful conversation. And I'm walking away feeling very empowered of like, when I don't like it, I'm going to change it. If
Right.
something's broken, I'm going to find people to help fix it. Like, that's how we create a better world and we bring others in with us to do this work. So I'm so honored to be one of those, doing the work with you in different ways and getting to serve on the Avowie board with you is such a great pleasure. And yeah, thank you so much. Do you have any parting message that you would like to say to maybe victims and survivors who are listening today?
Well, if you are in the midst of violence or a violent relationship or something has happened to you, every single state has a hotline that you can call and find. And if you can't find it, you can absolutely reach out to me here at the radio station. That's Carol Olson at WRAR.org. That's CarolOlson at WRAR.org, or at BCU, which is a much longer email, so I would just pick that one. And I'll help we my the Empower team will help get you to the right hotline. But every single state should have one that is advertised, and please call. They have live people manning those hotlines, and they can help get you to a shelter. They can help you learn how to retain evidence on your way to a hospital and where all the hospitals with forensic kits are. And it's important to go to that kind of hospital. And there are support groups probably in every local center in your community. So everyone's there to help you. If you need help finding them, just reach out.
Thank you so much. And thank you for literally saying, like, I will help you find the person that you need. That's really very amazing of you and speaks once again so much to how phenomenal Carol Olson is. So thank you so much for being on the show today. For our listeners, if you have any questions or ideas for the show, feel free to email me, Anna@standupresources.com. I'm your host of this bi-monthly show and here on the mend. I look forward to being with you next time. Thank you again, Carol.
Thank
And
you. It's been a pleasure.
absolutely. And to all of our listeners, be well, be strong, and goodbye.